Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 90 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on education versus indoctrination when we come back. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only on the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of the population, with a top tax rate of only 7%. Well, today, of course, the fears of those early opponents of the tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top tax rate had jumped to 60%. By the time Franklin D. Roosevelt was done, the top tax rate was over 90%. And the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time. In 1913, the average family had to work until January 30th to earn enough to satisfy the tax man at all levels. But this year, the average American family will have to work all the way through May 12th in order to earn enough to pay their federal, state, and local tax bills. Now, when you compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, says economist Daniel J. Mitchell, they only had to give the lord of the manor a third of their output, and they were considered slaves. So what does that make us today? This income tax and Social Security tax violate three of the Ten Commandments, eight statutes of the Old Covenant, and that includes our English common law. And the income tax and Social Security taxes are two criminal activities. The income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And that's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask this question: do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. Tax and Status, our school, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it. All right, we're talking about education versus indoctrination. And a fellow by the name of Zach Montgomery back in 1886 took issue with the public school system of the United States. In the last program, I showed you from Montgomery's book. He said that crime, poverty, insanity, and suicide, those four social evils, came out of the public school system of New England at a higher rate than it did out of the southern school system that had a parental basis. Remember, we used that term, parental and anti-parental. Anti-parental means we're going to take your kid and educate him here in our public school system. The parental school system is the homeschool system, where the state isn't going to educate your child at all. You're going to educate your child in your own home. Now, there's variations of that. There's a parochial school system. Typically, it's religious. Catholic people send their children to Catholic school. Mormon parents send their children to Mormon school. And, you know, the various other sects and denominations, Jewish people would send their children to Jewish school, and so on. So that each one of these families would have direct control over who would decide at the parental level what these children are going to be exposed to and what they're going to be educated to. Now, the public school system has a different philosophy. It's an anti-God, anti-religion, pro-evolution approach to education. It's purely materialistic. You can't pray in public school. You can't have God in the public school. You can't have the Ten Commandments or morality in the public school. And if there's a morality, it's a morality that is dictated and determined by teachers, school boards, and the political parties. It doesn't have anything to do with God or Jesus or Catholicism or the Pope or what you may believe personally as an individual. I mean, you could be a Muslim. And then you've got to send your child to this anti-God environment, whether you like it or not. Now, we used to have a different system of education, and there's a different system of education described in the Bible. The Amish people practice a different system of education, and Montgomery points out he's not opposed to education. He's opposed to public education, and he points out the differences between public education and private education, or, as he calls it, parental education. So we have the parental and the anti-parental school systems. Well, let's take a look at nine pages concerning crime, chapter 3. Another test or a difference in results between a small and a large dose of anti-parental education when operating upon the self-same community. In their desperate efforts to find some plausible explanation for the astounding growth of crime in the public school states, in excess of that found in the parental school districts, which will vindicate their idolized system. The advocates of state-governed schools have sometimes claimed that the difference between the number of convictions for crime in the public school states and the number of crimes found in the parental school states is owed to a variety of local causes entirely unconnected with and independent from the difference in educational systems. But a complete refutation of this assumption is found in the following statistics of the public school education and crime, demonstrating that in every and in very same localities, every material increase of expenditures for public school purposes has, without a single exception, been followed by a corresponding increase of crime. And now we're going to take a look at some examples. So let me lay it out in spades for you. The more money that you spend on public school, the result will be an increase in the rise or the rate of crime. In every case, without exception, from 1850 to 2008, that has been the rule. Let me repeat it in case you missed it. Listen up now. There is a direct correlation between the amount of money that you spend on public education and crime. We'll leave out for the moment the insanity, suicide, unemployment, and poverty. We'll just zero in here on criminality. But there's also a corresponding link with poverty, insanity, suicide, and unemployment. So we're going to zero in Chapter 3 on crime. There is a direct correlation between the amount of money that you spend on public education and the amount of crime you have. We are at all-time highs in the amount of money that we spend on public education per student. It's $10,000 per year per student. And in 2008, we have the highest crime rate per capita in the United States of America in our entire history. Now, I can make a very safe prediction based upon the statistics that we have from the Census Department, the Department of Education. The numbers don't lie. Liars figure. Figures don't lie. Going back to 1850 through 2008. Now, this book terminates in 1886. So this guy, he's just telling us, here's what happened in 1850, 1860, 70, and 80. I took a look at the facts and figures and said, oh my God, it not only was true from 1850 to 1880, hell, it's true in every corresponding decade from that point to this. And that is this. Once more. The more money you spend on public education, the more crime you're going to buy, because that's what the public education system does. It trains students in criminal behavior. That's the purpose behind it. That's what it does. That's what you're buying, and that's what you're getting. If you want more crime, you spend more money on public education, and you'll get it. In 1850, the state of Massachusetts had a native white population of 827,000. At that date, the public school pupils numbered 176,000. And the income for the support of the schools was $1 million. That averaged out to $5.70 for each student per year. With this comparatively limited expenditure for the maintenance of her anti-parental schools, Massachusetts had, out of a native population of 818,000, 653 native-born criminals. That came out to one for every 1,267 native inhabitants. Now, that's twice as many, and they're twice as much money, produced twice as many criminals, and I'll show you how. This, comparatively speaking, was a very small number for the public school state, though a very large number when compared with the number of criminals in any parental or private school state. But when we come down to 1880, just 30 years later, here's what we find, that her income for public school purposes had swollen to $4.5 million a year for the benefit of 316,000 public school students. So it went up from $5.70 to $15 per pupil, or from about $6 to $14. It doubled. So they doubled the amount, more than doubled the amount of money spent per student, counting every pupil that attended school at any time during the year. But Massachusetts expended on her schools during that same year more than her income. The actual amount was $4.7 million, being $20 for the pupils in average daily attendance. That's 2-to-1 in 30 years. And out of a native-born white population of 1,300,000, there were 2,070 adult native white convicts. That equaled 1 to every 638 inhabitants, in place of 1 to every 1,267 in 1850. And this leaves out the count of some 608 juvenile convicts confined to various reformatory institutions. Now, if we include these, that is the 1,267 plus 608 juveniles, the native white convicts of Massachusetts in 1880 would amount to 1 out of every 493 native white inhabitants. Now, when I'm reading these statistics over the air, and you're driving down the highway, sir, it goes in one ear and it goes out the other. So let me give you the bottom line. They increased their expenditures in public school between 1850 to 1880. And the net result in 1880 was they had twice as many people locked up in prison in 1880 as they had in 1850, which was the thesis that Zach Montgomery came up with when he wrote the book. He said, well, for crying out loud, Look at what the numbers are telling us. We spend more money on public education and we get twice as many criminals. Is there a connection? Is there a connection? We spend twice as much money, we get twice as much unemployment. We spend twice as much money, we get twice as many crazies. We spend twice as much money, we get twice as many people that are poor on the unemployment rolls, on the welfare rolls, and so on. Is there a connecting link? And the answer is absolutely. Absolutely. Because in the anti-parental states, something is going on that's different than in the parental states. Because if you take a look at the same period of time, it didn't happen that way in Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, North and South Carolina, and Georgia. Something was different in those six sample states in the South, practicing the parental system versus the northern states practicing the anti-parental system. Now remember, these people came to this country at essentially the same time, over the same period of time. They all speak the same language. All came from England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Germany, so on. These people have the same religion, use the same Bible. With one exception was Maryland. You had this, the six southern states now. Maryland is primarily, or was primarily, Catholic. The other five states are all Protestant, of various descriptions of Protestant theology, all using the Bible, all Christians, all believe. Something is different in Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Maine that is different from Virginia and North and South Carolina, for instance. Now, let's take a look now. Again, Connecticut. Turning now to Connecticut, the land of steady habits, we find an entirely similar condition of things. In 1850, Connecticut had in her schools 79,000 pupils with an income for school purposes of $430,000. Now, actually, when you read the page here, they've got it right down to the nitty-gritty. It's $430,826,000. I'm being $5.45 per pupil. I'm the guy that's rounding these numbers off for the benefit of you driving down the highway or listening on the internet or whatever it is. You don't have the document in front of you. It's hard when you're trying to describe statistical analysis. That's why I always suggest that you find out if I'm telling you the truth or lying to you. Get a copy of the book for yourself. Now, the problem is, I don't know where you're going to get a copy of the book. The book was first published, it looked like it was first written in 1880 in an article form. And then it went from the article form to the printer's form, and it was published by Gibson Brothers Printers and Bookbinders in 1886. Gibson Brothers Printers and Bookbinders, 1886. In more recent times, it has been published by St. Thomas Press, Post Office Box 35096. That's 35096, Houston, Texas, 77235. You can give it a shot there. St. Thomas Press, P.O. Box 35096, Houston, Texas, 77235. First printing was 1968, second printing, 1983. All right, now, or you can go to your local news bookstore and tell them you want a copy. I got a paperback copy here. Poison Drops in the Federal Senate. That's Poison Drops in the Federal Senate by Zach Montgomery, Z-A-C-H, Montgomery. See what you come up with. All right, going back to Connecticut now. I'll round these numbers off for you and I'll give you the conclusion. I did the math. I got my famous Sharp EL1197G3 computer out here, my little calculator. Now, in 1850, Connecticut had in her school 79,000 students, $430,000 being spent, $5.45 per student. At that time, her native population numbered 331,000. They had 244 convicts. That was one to every 1,358 native inhabitants. All right. 30 years later, 1880, her income for public schools was $1,441,000, more than three times as much money being spent on public schools. They now moved it up to $12.15 for every pupil that attended at any given time during the year. Counting only the 72,000 pupils in average daily attendance, that would be $19.81 per pupil. But out of a native white population of 481,000, she had 432 adult criminals, being one to every 1,136, leaving out of the count 403 juvenile convicts, the most damaging portion of the whole record, which when added to the adults makes 835 criminals, or one for every 576 native whites. So that's 576 over 1,136, crime more than doubled in that 30-year period. So we doubled the amount of money that we're spending on the public school system, and crime doubled in the same 30-year period. Now, it happened in Massachusetts. It happened in Connecticut. Now, is this a coincidence? No, because he goes through each state. And we're going to take a look next at Vermont, then New Hampshire, then Maine, then Rhode Island. Then we can take a look at Louisiana, New York, and we can look at Ohio and Illinois. And then we can look at every other state if you want to. And you get exactly the same proportion. Sometimes it's worse. Sometimes you spend twice as much money and you get three times as much crime. No, there's some connecting link here. We haven't come up to what that connecting link is yet, but there is a connecting link. Montgomery reveals it as we move along. Here's what happened I took a look at it and I said, let's extrapolate that forward from 1880 to 2008. And what do we get? Same thing. Same thing. The more money, every time you increase expenditures in the public school, this anti-parental school system, you get an increase in crime. But you also get an increase, a corresponding increase, in poverty, insanity, suicide, murder, and unemployment. All of these social ills, criminality, unemployment, poverty, insanity, suicide, and murder, you get the same corresponding results. But you don't get the same corresponding results in the Catholic schools, in the parochial schools. In the parental control schools, you do not get that. You can spend more money, you'll get more righteousness. But in the anti-parental schools, you spend more money, you get more crime. You spend more money, you get more poverty. Spend more money, you get more insanity. You get more suicide. What is the connecting link? What's causing that? Vermont. Likewise, in 1850, Vermont had an income for school purposes of $246,604 for the education of 100,785 pupils. That was about $2.50 per student. And at that time, Vermont had a native population of 280,000. Only 64, or one in every 4,372, were criminals. Pretty low criminal rate. But turning to the census report for 1880, we find that they're expending $450,000 on 73,000 students. They're spending $6.31 per student. They're counting only the 47,000 pupils in average daily attendance. We have 958 per student. And instead of one criminal for every 4,372, as we had in 1850, we now have, out of a native population of 290,000, 196 adult convicts, being one out of every 1,481. When to these are added the 134 native white juvenile offenders, of whom she seems to have had none in 1850. We have an aggregate of 330, or one native white criminal to every 879 native whites. That's 5 to 1. The crime rate rose 5 times. Now, if you take a look here and you say to yourself, why such a dramatic increase in crime? Notice that in 1850, we don't have juvenile delinquency. We don't have juvenile delinquency. Now, let me show you something over here on page 68 of Barton's book. This guy's name is David Barton, and he wrote a book called America to Pray or Not to Pray. That is America to Pray or Not to Pray, 160 pages or thereabouts, page 68. He points out that the big problems in the public school system, now this is prior to 1960, 7 big problems are going on in the public school system. It's called talking, chewing gum, making noise, running in the halls, getting out of turning line, wearing improper clothing, and not putting paper in the wastebaskets. Well, I was in the public schools prior to 1960. And I can testify that, yeah, there was talking, and that was against the rules, and they'd jump on you for that. Chewing gum. Yeah, I can remember some, always the girls. The girls always chewing gum, you know. And making noise. Yeah, we were rowdy and raising hell and making noise in class. Running in the halls. Yep, that was against the rules, too, so I didn't want you falling down the halls. And then getting out of turn in line. Yeah, they lined us up, you know, like robots and automatons. We didn't like that, and so we got out of turn. Wearing improper clothing. Well, that wasn't a problem in the public schools where I went because you could wear anything you wanted. And not putting paper in the wastebaskets. Well, I always tried to put my paper in the wastebaskets by throwing it from my desk up to the wastebasket at the teacher's desk. That was against the rules, too. All right, so I did that. I talked, I chewed gum, I made noise, I ran in the halls, I got out of turn in line. And the only thing I didn't do was wear improper clothing because that wasn't in any rules. And then putting paper in the wastebasket. There's your big problems. Okay, now here's what it is today. Well, as of the writing of this book, which was about 1988, let me look and see, 1991. Copyright 1988, 1991, David Barton, third edition. This is put out by Wall Builder Press. Jot this down, Wall Builder Press. P.O. Box 397, Aledo, Texas, A-L-E-D-O. That's P.O. Box 397, Aledo, Texas, 76008. 76008, Aledo, A-L-E-D-O. They got a phone down there, too, if you got a... I got a pen there. Write this down. It's 817-441-6044. That's 817-441-6044. All right. Here's what your problems are in the public schools today. Rape, number one. The number one problem in public school today is rape. My God, in the Bible, that's a capital felony. Robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombings, murder. That's a capital felony. Suicide, absenteeism, vandalism, extortion, drug abuse. Oh, my God, that's witchcraft. That's a capital crime. Well, looking in the scripture. Alcohol abuse, gang warfare, pregnancy, abortion, and venereal disease. 17 criminal acts. All 17 of these, by the way, are prohibited in the Bible. All 17 of these, by the way, are prohibited in your secular law. I mean, it's against the law in New York to rape people. It's against the law in every state in the Union to rob them, assault them, burglary, arson, bombings, murder, suicide, absenteeism. All of these are criminal activities. Absenteeism is not against the law in the scripture, but absenteeism from any of the holy days is. So absenteeism is a crime, and it's laid out in the Bible as being a crime. Failing to assemble yourselves together on the Sabbath is a crime. Vandalism, extortion, drug abuse, witchcraft, alcohol abuse, gang warfare, pregnancy, premarital pregnancy, abortion, venereal disease. Well, those are pretty serious crimes, and that's in the public school system. Now, if you take a look at the Catholic school system, they don't have a problem with rape, robbery, assault, burglary, and arson. If you'll take a look in the parental education system, you don't have a problem with rape, robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombings, murder, suicide, absenteeism, venereal disease, abortion, pregnancy, gang warfare, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, extortion, and vandalism to this day in the year 2008. Don't have a problem with it. In the anti-parental school system, you do, including such things as school shootings, like Columbine High School is a classic example. Some two kids come in there, and they start shooting the school up and kill a bunch of students. You saw it here in a public college in Virginia last year, about this time last year. Some guy comes in there and shoots 30 people. All right, now there's a cause and effect relationship that causes that. And Zach Montgomery identified it in 1886 and published it. Nobody paid attention in 1886, and nobody's paying attention today. But this guy, David Barton, put his finger on the pulse of it. And Zach Montgomery put his finger on the pulse of it. When we finish with this series, you too can put your finger on the pulse of the cause and effect of the criminal behavior and the problems with public school. Meanwhile, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School, the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports. Reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors and publications that we endorse and recommend will reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book, Poison Drops in the Federal Senate by Zach Montgomery, Education and Indoctrination. Now, we've covered Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Vermont, and we found that the crime rate doubles with the expenditures on public school. The more money you spend on public education, the more criminal behavior you get. And then we saw from 1850 to 1880 that Massachusetts and Connecticut had doubled, but in Vermont, it went up 5 times, 5 to 1. New Hampshire, 8 times more criminals, 8 times. Now, of course, they spent 4 times more money. Now, watch the connection. I'll read you the numbers here, but I want to give you the answer before we start. In Massachusetts and Connecticut, when they doubled their expenditures on public education, they doubled their crime rate. In Vermont, when they doubled their expenditures on public school, it went up 5 times. In New Hampshire, they increased the expenditure for public school education by 4 times, and they multiplied 8 times more criminals. They produced 8 times as many. This is amazing. I said, the more money you spend on public school, the more criminals you're going to get. And I told you last time the reason for it, the purpose for public school, the reason that it exists is to train people in crime. It is a crime school. I'll show you that as we progress along. I just wanted to tell you that that's the purpose behind it, and it works. It's working perfectly. If you want more crime, you spend more money on public school than you're going to get it. You double the amount of money that you spend. Right now in America, we're spending $500 billion a year on public education. If you double that tomorrow to $1 trillion, you double crime. You'll double crime in 30 years by doubling the expenditure. That's statistically proven from 1850 to 1880, but it's better than that. From 1880 to 2008, the same numbers apply. All right, now there's a cause and effect relationship. New Hampshire in 1850 expended on her schools, public and private, the sum of $221,000 for the education of 81,000 students, being 272, that's $2.72 per pupil. And at that time, out of a native population of 303,000, they had just 25 native criminals, being one to every 12,000. 30 years later, we find her with an income of $559,000 for the use of 64,000 students. They moved it up to $8.64 for every pupil attending, or $11.42 per pupil if we only count the 48,000 in average daily attendance. And presto, instead of one criminal for every 12,000 as in 1850, when expending one-fourth as much for each student, she has, out of 300,000 natives, 209 native white criminals, or one to every 1,435. If we add to these New Hampshire's native white juvenile criminals for 1891, then we have an aggregate of 300, or one for every 999 of our native white population. That's eight times more criminals. We spent four times as much money and got eight times more criminals. You spend twice as much money, you get twice as many criminals. You spend four times as much money, you get eight times as many criminals. Now, isn't that just real special? Hell, it works that way right now. You do the same thing in 1990, 2000, and 2010, get the same answers. Now, let's take a look at Maine. In 1850, Maine's total expenditures for schools, public and private, $380,000 for the education of 200,000 students. They were spending $1.90 per pupil at that time. Out of a native population of 550,000, they had 66 criminals. That was one to every 8,346. In 1880, her income for public schools reached the sum of $1 million for the use of 150,000 students. They're spending $7 for each student that attended school at any time during the school year. Now, if we count only 106,000 in average daily attendance, we'll have $10 per pupil. And out of a native white population of 588,000, she had 321 adult native white criminals, being one out of every 1,832. And if we add her 112 native white juvenile criminals, we have 433, or one in every 1,358. So you put $1.90 over $10, and that's 5 to 1. You take 1,358 over 8,346, that's 6 to 1. So they spent five times more money and developed six times more criminals. I'm just telling you, boys and girls, read them and weep, as they say down at the Blue Room. And these numbers are very consistent, and it works for Rhode Island as well. It works for Rhode Island, and then it works for New York, and then Ohio. Here's Ohio in 1850. Just take a look here in 1850. Ohio had a native population of 1.7 million and was expending 500,000 on students, $1 million or $2. That 500,000 students, they're spending $1 million or $2.02 per student. At that time, they had 102 native-born criminals, being one native criminal for every 17,000 population. In 1880, they were receiving from the people $11 million for the public school education. 752,000 students, they were spending $15 per pupil. Out of a native white population of 2.7 million, they had 1,674 criminals, being one to every 1,626 in place of the one to every 17,232 in 1850. In other words, while Ohio was increasing her expenditures upward sevenfold in order to check crime, her criminals increased upwards of tenfold. Got that? They spent seven times more money, got 10 times more criminals. Now, he goes through here and he points this out. It works the same way with poverty, insanity, suicide, murder, and unemployment. The numbers are all different, but all of these numbers now come from the census. I mean, hell, we've got these census numbers go back, you know, to 1790. Now, there's two school systems that are being looked at here, and the two school systems are called the parental and anti-parental. The parental school system is where you educate your child. You direct this child's education. You send him to Mormon school. You send him to Jewish school. You send him to Catholic school. Take your pick. All works the same way. The difference between the anti-parental and the parental school is morality. I'm going to give you the answer in advance. It's morality. Now, you can sit there and argue that the morality of Muslims sucks. You can sit there and say, those Mormons, you know, with their polygamy, oh my God, that's terrible morality. I don't know. But you don't have crime in Saudi Arabia. Among the Muslims, where they practice Muslim theology, they practice Muslim morality. You don't have crime. Now, I use the term, they don't have crime. Everybody, every society around the world, all the time, has a little bit of crime. I mean, you can take the most moral people in the world, and once in a while, one of them goes off his rocker, deep end, or something like that. He goes out and he kills somebody. He goes out and he steals. He does this, that, something else. But the general rule in any society, you can take Buddhists, you can take Muslims, you can take Shintoists. I got to tell you a story about the Japanese. They're kind of funny. This guy is telling a story, and he said this, he talked about New York. He walks up to his telephone over here, and he uses the telephone. Then he bangs the telephone, and then he looks in the change receipt, and he doesn't see anything in there. And he walks out. A little while later, a Japanese guy walks in the same telephone booth. And in the telephone booth, this Japanese guy, he opens the little box and he sees a quarter in it. He closes it back up and he walks out. He leaves the quarter in the box. He walked out and he was interviewed. And he was asked, now, sir, you opened the little box and you saw a quarter in there, but you didn't take it. And they asked the question, why not? And the Japanese fellow said, well, I don't know whose quarter that is. But he said, I do know that it's not mine. I don't know where the Japanese get that kind of morality. I don't know if all Japanese practice that. But I was struck by that fact. That Japanese guy is exactly right. He said, I don't know whose that is. But I do know whose it is, and it isn't mine. So I'm going to leave it right there, and the real owner of the quarter can come back and get it. I've never seen an American that would do that. Hell, we're busy trying to bust into the telephone to get out the money or to put a slug in it and cheat the phone company out of the price of the telephone call. Where did we learn that kind of morality? The answer is public school. The answer is public school. Now listen, your children, when they're exposed to drugs, illegal drugs, cocaine, heroin, or marijuana, the most likely place for your child to be introduced to drugs is in the public school. That's where your child is going to be introduced to drugs. It will be at public school. When your child is introduced to the concepts of rape, it will be at public school in sex education class. When your child learns about condoms and premarital sex, it will be in public school in sex education class. That's where he's going to learn that immorality. When your child learns sodomy, he's going to learn it in public school in the sex education class called alternative sexual behavior, alternative lifestyle. Alternative lifestyle. Let me share that with you for a second here. I'll flip back to page 27. Again, going back to the book, this one's called America, To Pray or Not to Pray. Now, David Barton wrote the book concerning morality. It doesn't have to do with praying per se. It has to do with the school prayer cases, which began in 1962. That's why he titled the book, I think, America, To Pray or Not to Pray. He's not trying to get you to pray in public school. That's not his motivation here. But here's page 28. It says, 1988, California was considering adopting legislation on sex education for public schools, requiring that course material and instruction shall stress the monogamous heterosexual intercourse. That's one man, one woman, within marriage, a traditional American value. All right, that's 1988. The senator promoting the bill received a letter of protest from the ACLU dated April 18, 1988. And here's the ACLU. They said, it is our position that monogamous heterosexual intercourse within marriage as a traditional American value is an unconstitutional establishment of religious doctrine in public schools. There are various religions which hold contrary beliefs with respect to marriage and monogamy. We believe this bill violates the First Amendment. Now, students across the nation are being provided with materials in their sex education classes from groups like Planned Parenthood. Materials containing photographs, illustrations, and graphics encouraging and demonstrating premarital sexual relations for adolescents. Now, consider these mild excerpts from books and materials that Planned Parenthood and similar groups recommend for adolescents. Remember, Zach Montgomery in the last program said, you know, They could put a whore in as a public school teacher, and that whore would be teaching your daughters. Okay, well, they've done that. We have whores in the public schools teaching your daughters to be whores. We have sodomites in the public schools teaching your boys to be sodomites. That's criminal. That's a crime. Now, as a result of that, remember, you now have an increase then of these crimes. Page 68 again. Rape, robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombings, murder, suicide, and absenteeism. All right, these are crimes that are being taught in your public school. So let's take a look at one. More and more people are coming. Now, this is boys and sex. This is from the textbooks in your public schools. And not just in California. All you people, you know, hey, wake up down there in Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. They're teaching this same crap to your children down there in your public schools as well. You people down the Bible Belt, where 65% of you go to church every Sunday, and 75% of you are subscribing to the pornography channels, for crying out loud. Hypocrites. Yeah, you people. Listen to this. More and more people are coming to understand that having sex is a joyful and enriching experience at any age. That's on page 2. Playing with girls sexually before adolescence increases the chances for a satisfactory sex life when a boy grows up. Premarital intercourse does have its definite values as a training ground for marriage. Boys and girls who start having intercourse when they are adolescents will find that it is a big help. It's like taking a car out on a test run before you buy it. Now, here's girls and sex. Girls understand now that they are far more likely to make good sexual and social adjustments to life if they learn to be warm, open, responsive, and sexually unafraid. They're learning to be sexual partners of men. Now, down at Flo's Whorehouse, we just call them whores. Hookers out on the street. Everyone's agreed that teenage sex should be a learning experience. Notice everyone's agreed. I wanted to disagree with that. I dissent. I don't believe that. So out of 300 million of you Americans out there, you got one dissenter over here in Isabella, Missouri. Just thought I'd point that out. Now, they go on to tell us, for you girls, sex play with boys can be exciting, pleasurable, and even worthwhile. It will help later sexual adjustment. You've changed the combination. There are only two basic kinds of sex. Sex with victims and sex without victims. Sex with victims is always wrong. Sex without victims is always right. One way to avoid having victims is, of course, to have sexual relationships only with your friends. The great orgasm robbery. Sex is fun and joyful, and it comes in all types and styles, all of which are okay. Sodomy, bestiality, whatever, turns on, it's okay. Do what gives pleasure, and enjoy what gives pleasure, and ask for what gives pleasure. Don't rob yourself of joy by focusing on old-fashioned ideas about what's normal or nice or moral. The effect of these school-age sex ed curriculums have had on the nation since the rejection of religious principles is very apparent. By prohibiting student access to religious principles, the court has prohibited student access to the principles which produce morality. On the following graphs, notice the unusually strong correlation between the court's decisions to prohibit student access to religious principles while at school and the dramatic changes in student morality. Right now, this is a corresponding set of graphs. Zach Montgomery used the census tables from 1850 to 1880 to come to his conclusions. David Barton went to the Department of Education. I mean, hell, he just went right to Washington, D.C. and said, hey, give us the numbers. I want the numbers of teenage pregnancies, that is pregnancies to unwed girls under 15 years of age. I want the birth rates for unwed girls 15 to 19 years old. And I'd like to see the pregnancies to unwed girls 15 to 19 years of age. I want to see the live births plus the reported abortions. Then I want to compare that with the population growth. Then I want to take a look at all of these numbers prior to 1962 and after 1962, or in that period from 1962 to 1988 when he wrote the first edition to the book, and put all the numbers together. Comes up with the same conclusions that Zach Montgomery did. You've got parental, and you've got anti-parental. Now, anytime the parents are teaching their children, you may have a whore, a hooker, working on Times Square with a little girl who she's probably going to teach and train to be a whore or a hooker. Probably. You know, birds of a feather flock together. But you could just about bet that all of the Mormon mothers aren't going to do that. And all of the Mormon mothers are going to teach their little girls something different concerning Mormon morality. And you can just about bet that the Catholic mothers, you know, the typical average run-of-the-mill, everyday garden variety Catholic mother, is not going to teach her daughter to be a hooker, a whore. But the morality of that Catholic mother is going to be something different than the morality of that Mormon mother, and that Jewish mother, and that Muslim mother, and that Buddhist mother. All of these mothers teaching their little girls morality are going to have a different morality. But generally speaking, I think you could just about bet, they are not going to teach their daughters to be whores, but in public schools they do. So you should not wonder why more than 90% of young women in the United States of America are not virgins when they marry. Hell, they've lost their virginity by the time they're 14 in the ninth grade. And that's because of the criminal activities, the criminal education that they receive in public school. Now, listen, we have a law that says thou shalt not commit adultery and thou shalt not practice fornication. Doesn't say it in those words, but fornication is sexual relations before marriage, which is prohibited in Scripture. The criminal, those are two criminal activities that are taught openly in public school. They don't teach that in Catholic school. They're not teaching that in parochial schools. They're teaching some form of morality. They're not teaching that, you know, in Japan. I shouldn't say that, I guess. I don't know what the hell they're teaching in Japan. But here in Barton's book, the Japanese came over to the United States and took a look at our public schools over here. And it is a potent commentary on the current state of the American education system when, after 2 years of extensive study, the Japanese researchers could find zero specific aspects of American education considered worth emulating in Japan. They came over here, and they looked around for 2 years trying to figure out what they could take from the American education system back to Japan, and their conclusion was nothing. Zero. Not one single thing. Now, the Japanese have morality over there. I mean, if a Japanese guy opens up a telephone, you know, a return box, sees a quarter in there, closes it, and walks out and leaves it, that says something for Japanese morality. You sure as hell ain't going to find that in the United States. Let me tell you that. All right, I'm about out of time again. We'll have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and or The Law Hour, then please go to the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet daily, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.